Hey friends, are you familiar with the account of Joseph in the Bible? I want you to picture a 17-year-old who is the 11th of 12 boys in the family. And if you're thinking, wow, 12 boys, that's a lot of work for one woman. There's some family dynamics that you need to be aware of as we get into the story of Joseph. So Joseph's dad is named Jacob. And Jacob had actually 13 children, one daughter named Dinah, but all 13 children by four different women. He had one favorite woman whose name was Rachel. But Rachel couldn't have any kids, not for a very, very long time, but he wanted to have kids. And so he ended up having kids by three other women before finally God opened Rachel's womb and she gave birth to a young boy named Joseph. And Joseph, because Joseph came from Rachel, Joseph became dad's favorite. Rachel ended up having another son after Joseph, and his name was Benjamin. And as we go through the story of Joseph over these next couple of weeks, you'll need to keep that in mind, that Rachel had two boys, Joseph and Benjamin. But Joseph and Benjamin were dad's favorites, and that really irked the brothers. If you've ever had a relationship in a family where there's an obvious favorite to mom and dad, you know that that doesn't always go very well when dad likes one over the other, and the boys didn't like it. So there was some jealousy going on in the family already, but then Joseph had dreams. He was a dreamer. So God gave him some really incredible dreams that he was not shy about sharing with his brothers, and two dreams in particular. He came to his brothers one day as they were all working in the field, and they were working with some grain, and he said to his brothers, "Guys, I had a dream that we were all working in the field with some grain, and my sheaf of grain stood in the middle while all of yours bowed down to me." And that didn't sit well with them at all. And they said, "Oh, and I had another dream. I had a dream that that there were stars and there was the sun and the moon and everything. Every one of those things was bowing down to me. And guess how many stars there were in the dream? 11. And he had 11 brothers. And they didn't like that. And so there was some more jealousy. And then there was something that dad did that didn't help at all. He gave Joseph a richly ornamented coat. You may have seen there's a Broadway play about Joseph. And in the Broadway play, he has this multicolored, multifaceted coat that just is lavish. And we aren't told if he wore it all over the place or if he flaunted it in front of his brothers. But knowing a 17-year-old boy who knew his brothers were jealous of him and who knew he had dad's love and affection, I'm guessing he maybe did. But his brothers didn't like it. But dad treated him as a very special boy. It's a fascinating story that we're going to go through over the next couple of weeks. And you might be asking, well, what in the world does this have to do with you? Well, a couple of things. First of all, if you're in a family where there's some rough family dynamics, it's not the first time in the history of the world where God's ever seen that. If you're in a family where there's some rough relationships between siblings or between parents, yours isn't the first time that God's seen anything like that. We're going to see over the next couple of weeks that God knows how to deal with those things, and he gives us some good guidance on how to stand tall when our relationships get really broken and kind of knock our feet out from underneath us. And secondly, another thing, what does this have to do with you? Remember how Jacob, the dad, treated Joseph? How he treated him so special, unique? He showered him with his affection and his love. He gave him the unique, richly ornamented coat. Well, that's a picture of how God treats you. That's a picture of how God loves you. And that's something else that's also going to come through as we go through the life of Joseph over these next couple of weeks. We'll get to see a picture of how God feels about you, about how he sees you as someone who's so unique and so special, and somebody that he cares about and can't stop thinking about. Hey friends, still talking about the life of Joseph today for day two. If you were here yesterday, then let's just do a quick review. So Joseph was one of 12 brothers. Their father's name was Jacob, and Joseph's brothers did not like him at all. because Joseph was Jacob's dad's favorite, and he got this richly ornamented robe, and I think he kind of liked to flaunt the robe a little bit, and he had the special dreams that implied that his whole family was going to be bowing down to him someday, and so they didn't like hearing any of that. So picking up today, so Joseph's brothers were out in the field working, and Dad said, hey, why don't you go check on your brothers and see how they're doing? So he goes out into the field, and the brothers see them coming, and you know what they said? They said, they had a nickname for him. They said, oh, here comes the dreamer. They identified him by his dreams. You know, he's like, oh, there's the dreamer who thinks that life is just going to go the way that his dreams say. And then they got this bright idea. They said, let's get rid of the dreamer. We don't like him. We don't like Dad's affection toward him. We're kind of jealous of his coat because it looks really awesome. But they said, let's get rid of him. And their first idea was to kill him. They were going to kill their brother. So yesterday we talked about tough family relationships. This is a tough family relationship. But then Reuben, one of the brothers, the oldest brother, he said, no, we shouldn't kill him. Let's just sell him instead, which I don't know if that's really much better, but at least he was still alive. And so they decided to sell their brother, and that's what happened. They sold their brother to some slave traders who happened to be going by, and Joseph's gone. He's gone. I'm going to pause there to make one application, then I'm going to keep going with the story, but remember what they called Joseph as they saw him coming? They called him the dreamer, the guy who dreams. They identified him by what he did. How do you identify yourself? Like, what is your self-image based on? Joseph was the dreamer. That's how they looked at him. Do you think, I'm the guy who has to perform at work every day and do better than everyone else? I'm the girl who has to look better than everybody else to get everybody's attention. I'm the person who has to give the impression that I have the perfect marriage or the perfect children. I am the one who has to do everything just perfectly. I'm the one who needs everybody's attention. I'm the one who needs people to feel or to tell me that I do a really great job with things in order to feel good about myself. There are any number of ways that we assign value to ourselves or of how we define ourselves. The Bible actually gives us the best way to define ourselves, and that is to define ourselves not by how we live, not by what we do, but by how Jesus lived. And by what Jesus did. And that's a good thing, because when Jesus lived, he never did anything wrong. No one was ever able to convict him of they weren't able to find anything in his life. Any time that he said the wrong thing or crossed a line that he shouldn't have, like, he just loved people. He taught the right thing. And the Bible says that that's how God looks at us. There's a Bible passage in the Bible book of Galatians that says, everyone who's been baptized into Christ has been clothed with Christ. So remember Joseph's richly ornamented robe. It covered him, and it made him look just wonderful. Picture the life of Jesus covering you. And so when God looks at you, he actually sees every good thing that Jesus did, which is perfection. So he looks at you, and he sees perfection. That's not what Joseph's brothers saw. When they looked at Joseph, they saw somebody that was worth getting rid of. And so they did. And then, of course, they had to tell someone. They had to tell Dad. And remember, Joseph was Dad's favorite. And so they made up a story. They took the jacket. They didn't let Joseph take it with him. And they cut open an animal, and they dipped it in the animal's blood. And then they took that bloody jacket back to Dad, and they said, Dad, look what happened to Joseph. He must have been attacked by an animal. He's just gone. We heard a struggle, and we heard a noise, and we came running, but it was too late. He had already been dragged away, but his jacket was here, and we thought you'd want to have it. Of course, it was a lie. And they tried to comfort him with lies, of course, but it didn't work. And it says, the Bible even says that Jacob, he refused to be comforted. In other words, he had lost hope. His favorite son was gone. Just gone. As far as he could tell, never to be seen ever again. And maybe you've been in a place like that too. Not in the exact situation, but a place where you've lost hope. Where you just don't see how things can turn out well. And if that's the case, if you look into your future and you just see like a dead end, or if you see just empty black space, or if you see nothing, keep tuning in over these next couple of days, because the life of Joseph is going to give you hope again. Hey friends, back today to talk more about Joseph. Quick recap from what we've talked about so far. Joseph, one of 12 boys, all belonging to Jacob. There was some family hostility. The brothers ended up selling their brother to slave traders. And they went back and they told their dad that a ferocious animal had gotten the best of him. And so dad's heart was broken. So we pick up the story now where Joseph is in the hands of the slave traders, but they ended up trading him or selling him to somebody else in the land of Egypt, into the household of a man named Potiphar. And Joseph became like the house servant of this guy named Potiphar. And it's really interesting how the Bible talks about this, because it says that God was with Joseph in everything that he did. And he not only blessed everything that Joseph did, but he blessed Potiphar's household through everything that Joseph did. So as soon as Joseph comes into the household and starts working, God wants to send a message that God is with Joseph. And so the way he does that is by he makes things go exceptionally well for Potiphar and his whole household, which is really, really good. And so you might start to think that, oh good, things are turning around for Joseph now. But just wait, there was somebody else in Potiphar's household, and that was Potiphar's wife. And so Joseph, you know, picture a late teenage young man who's been working in the fields. You know, he's tan, he's buff, I mean, he's good looking, And Potiphar's wife starts to notice this guy who's doing the work around the house. And then one day, Potiphar's wife comes up to this nice-looking young man and says, "My husband will never know. He'll never find out, because I'll never tell him, and I know you'll never tell him. Why don't we just go take a little break and let's go back to the bedroom and see what happens?" And you know what Joseph said? He said no. And he didn't just say no. He said, "How could I do such a wicked thing and sin against God?" Which is really significant, because it shows you how he looked at his life. He looked at his life in the context of, is God smiling at me or is God angry at me? Am I doing things that please God or that anger God? We go through life and we often want the attention of everybody else around us. We ask, do my parents love me? Do my siblings care about me? Are my friends happy with me? Are they sharing nice pictures, you know, with me? Are they inviting me to the different things? Does my boss care about me? Do my coworkers appreciate me? Do all these different people like me? And we start kind of, in a sense, performing for all these different people, making sure we are everything that we think that they want us to be. But Joseph said none of that. Joseph shows us none of that really matters. He just said, "Am I doing okay with God?" And that was his standard for how he was going to live his life. Am I doing okay with God? And you might question that as a wise, you know, whether or not that was a wise career move based on what happened next. So he says no. He says, no, that would be a sin against God. God created, you know, just husbands and wives to have sex with each other. And that's it. I mean, you know, God's not against sex. He loves the act of sex because he's the one who created it, and he just established it within a marriage relationship. He says that's the best sex of all. And Joseph understood that, and he got that. And he said, I'm not going to sin against God by helping somebody cross that line and do something that God says that they shouldn't. And so Potiphar's wife didn't take that so well. She got really upset with him. Joseph started running, you know, the opposite direction, and she grabbed a hold of his coat that he was wearing, and it came off of Joseph as he goes off and, you know, runs away so that he can just get himself away from the temptation, which, by the way, was a very wise move. If you feel like you're being tempted by something, just run away. Just run away. Don't play around with it. Don't try to toe the line. Just get far, far away. And so Joseph does that. But now Potiphar's wife is holding the coat, and you know what she does with it? She goes to her husband and says, Do you know what that young man tried to do to me? He tried to have his way with me. He said that he wanted to take me back to the bedroom and do all sorts of whatevers. Can you imagine? I can't believe that this young man is working in our house. and that you led him here. And Potiphar, even though he can see, you know, he can see that the household has been blessed, his work is just taken off because of Joseph being in there. He's not gonna upset his wife. And so you know what he does to Joseph? He throws him in prison. He throws him in prison. And so you might wonder, well, why should I be faithful to a God who allows things like that to happen? And I guess it depends on what your definition of like a good life or a successful life is. Joseph's definition of a successful life was one where God was with him. He wanted God with him. And we saw that as he was in Potiphar's household. The Bible says God was with him, and he showed that. He blessed him. Even after a very difficult stretch of being in the hands of slave traders, God was still with him, and God still took care of him, and God was still there. And then even after he got thrown in prison, that same chapter in the Bible, it says that when Joseph got thrown into prison, God was with him there too. And God started to elevate Joseph in the prison where he was given responsibility, and people started to respect him. And you can see things are starting to turn around again. And that God was with Joseph even during the hard times. And if that's your definition of a successful life, of having God with you during the good times and also during the hard times, then you know what, my friends? You actually already have a good life. When little baby Jesus was born, in the book of Matthew, it says he'll be named Emmanuel, which is an Old Testament term, a Hebrew term, which has a meaning. It's like they'll call him Emmanuel, and the name Emmanuel means very simply, God is with us. In other words, Jesus was born, little baby Jesus was born, and just as a way for God to say that I'm going to be with you. In good times and in bad times. And if that's your definition of a successful life, a good life of having God with you, you already have a good life, just like Joseph did. We'll see you tomorrow. Hey friends, day 4, talking about the life of Joseph in the Bible. Hope you've been enjoying yourself so far. I love telling the story of Joseph. So last time we were talking about Joseph, he was in the household of a guy named Potiphar. And Potiphar's wife just took Joseph's feet out from underneath him by accusing him of doing something that was, that he didn't do. So Joseph ends up in prison. Potiphar throws him into prison. And he's sitting in prison for 2 years. 2 years go by. And he's sitting in prison, and nothing is happening. I mean, we talk about how God was blessing him in prison, and everything that he did was, it turned out well. And so people were noticing good things about Joseph. And then 2 years go by, and then something really interesting happened. Do you remember how Joseph's brothers referred to him when he was still at home, and he was coming to check on them in the fields that day? They called him the dreamer, right? Well, we see the dream thing come up again. There were two other guys in prison. The Pharaoh of Egypt had thrown two of his employees into prison. There was the cup bearer, who was the guy who held the cup for Pharaoh, and didn't just hold the cup. And you know, whenever he was thirsty, he said, you know, give me my water to drink or my wine or whatever. He was the guy. We think he was the guy who actually tasted the wine before it got to Pharaoh's mouth, so that he could see if there was, you know, like if there was poison in it, they would kill that guy instead of killing Pharaoh. So I don't know if you'd like that job, but that was his job. But apparently the cupbearer made Pharaoh very angry, and so he sent him to prison. And then there was another guy, there was the baker, the guy who would just, you know, bake the meals for Pharaoh. Apparently he made Pharaoh very angry, and he got thrown into prison. So both these guys are in prison with Joseph. And Joseph wakes up one morning, and he can tell that both these guys are very upset. Like, something obviously happened. And he asked them, guys, what's going on? What happened? And they both said the same thing. I had a dream. And it's really upsetting me. It's really disturbing. And they told Joseph their dreams. And Joseph said, well, God's going to interpret those dreams for you. So let's interpret those dreams. So the cupbearer tells his dream. And Joseph says, oh, the meaning of your dream is really obvious. It's like 3 days from now, you're going to get your job back. Pharaoh's going to call you out of prison, and he's going to elevate you to your position again, and you're going to be the cupbearer for the Pharaoh, just like you were before. And the baker hears this, and he thinks, oh, well, man, that's great. I bet you my dream means the same thing. So he says, well, you know, let me tell you my dream, and he tells him his dream. And Joseph says, okay, well, here's the meaning of your dream. In 3 days, your life is going to change too. In 3 days, you're going to die. and the Pharaoh is going to take you out of prison, but he's going to have you killed. And both those things ended up happening. But before they ended up happening, you know, Joseph told them the meaning of the dreams, and he said, in 3 days, you know, those things are going to happen. He had a request of them. He said, don't forget about me. Please don't forget about me. I've been here for a long time. Maybe he told them the whole story, maybe he didn't, but he did something good. Something, you know, something amazing, interpreting dreams. And he wanted someone to remember him. And so, I mean, really, he was asking the cupbearer because he was going to get his job back. And so 3 days goes by. The baker is taken out of prison and he's killed. And on the same day, the cupbearer he's taken out of prison and he gets his job back. And the first thing he did when he saw Pharaoh was not tell him about Joseph. He forgot. He forgot about him. I bet you he promised that he wouldn't. And maybe he even intended not to forget about him, but he did. And maybe you sometimes feel like somebody has forgotten about you. Maybe you feel like you just kind of get lost in the shuffle of life. Maybe you sometimes wonder if God has forgotten about you. Now, God promises in His Word. He promises in the Bible that He won't. There's even a Bible passage that compares God's attention that He gives to you to a mother's attention for her child and says, though a mother might forget her child, and you might think, what mother is going to forget her child? But He says, you know, even though that's hardly possible because of how mothers love their children. If that would ever happen, maybe. But God will never forget about you. And the definitive proof that God will never forget about you is God hanging on a cross. The same day that God was thrown in prison and coming out of it, and he wasn't elevated in, you know, in front of the Sanhedrin or the council or the rulers in the city of Jerusalem. He was executed. Jesus, the Son of God, was killed because he was thinking about you. That's God's sign that he will always remember you. And you might look at the story of Joseph and ask another question then. Well, if God always remembers us, if God always says he's going to be there for us, then what's up with Joseph? Because he did what he was supposed to do for Potiphar, and he got thrown into prison. He was faithful for 2 years in prison, and he interpreted the guy's dreams, and he just wanted them to remember him, and they didn't. So where is God remembering Joseph? We'll show you tomorrow. I'll see you then. Hey friends, finishing up the week with Joseph. Just about halfway through the story, and hope you've enjoyed yourself so far. So last time when we talked about Joseph, Joseph had been forgotten about. Remember, Joseph was sitting in prison after being kicked out of Potiphar's house for doing nothing wrong, and he met the cupbearer and the baker for the Pharaoh of Egypt, and Joseph interpreted their dreams, which didn't end well for the baker, but it did end well for the cupbearer, and Joseph had a request of him. He said, please don't forget about me. And so the cupbearer gets set free. He goes and he serves Pharaoh again, and he forgot about Joseph for 2 years. 2 years go by. Joseph's still in prison. The cupbearer, over those 2 years, he does not think about Joseph at all, the guy who interpreted his dream. But after 2 years, something happens with Pharaoh. Pharaoh wakes up one night, and he is incredibly disturbed, and he's just on edge. And the reason he's on edge is because, guess what he had? He had some dreams. And he was sure that they meant something. And so he asked all of his smart guys in Egypt, can you tell me what these dreams mean? So he shares the dreams with them, and we have no idea, buddy. Maybe you just had something bad for dinner. I don't know if they actually said that. But they couldn't interpret the dreams. And this is upsetting to Pharaoh. I mean, just he's very, very upset. And guess who catches wind of Pharaoh being upset about not being able to interpret his dreams? The cupbearer. And he comes to Pharaoh and he says, excuse me, sir, I just remembered something. 2 years ago, when I was sitting in prison, there was a guy in prison, and I had a dream, and I was feeling upset, kind of like you are, and he was actually able to interpret the dream. And I wasn't the only one in prison who had a dream. There was another guy in prison who had a dream, and the guy who was in prison, he interpreted that guy's dream, and both of his interpretations were spot on. Both things happened, and I'm wondering if that guy is still in prison. It's been 2 years, but if he's still in prison, maybe he can interpret your dreams. And so Pharaoh is very desperate right now, and so he invites Joseph to come out of prison, and he gets all cleaned up, and he takes a shower and maybe throws on some cologne or something like that, and he comes in front of the Pharaoh, and the Pharaoh is just kind of looking him over like, I don't know about this, I don't know that there's much hope here, and Joseph, this is like his one chance to get out. I mean, if he does something really good here, maybe now things start to turn around for him. And so he goes in front of Pharaoh, and Pharaoh looks at Joseph and he says, I hear that you can interpret dreams. And you know what Joseph said? No. He said, no, I can't. Like, really, that's what he said. He told Pharaoh, no, I can't, which I think was really, really risky for him to say. Because that's his one shot. And Pharaoh, we don't know if he's a patient man or not, but I think he put his life at risk. But that, no wasn't the only thing he said. No, Pharaoh, I can't. But, he said, but God will give you the interpretation. You know, when Joseph had an opportunity to shine the spotlight on himself, he didn't. He chose to shine the spotlight on God instead. And there's a passage in the Bible that really defines that as the purpose of our lives. It says, whether we eat or drink or whatever we do it all for the glory of God, you know, to give glory to God. And that's basically a biblical way of saying we shine the spotlight on God. Is that the goal of our lives isn't to get people to look at us. The goal of our lives is to get people to look at God. And again, you might wonder, looking at the life of Joseph, well, why would he want to do that? With all the things that God had allowed him to go through. God had allowed him to be sold by his brothers and be in the hands of slave traders and get thrown into prison and then sit in prison after he was doing the right thing. Why in the world would he be so quick to shine the spotlight on a God who allowed those bad things to happen? And you might think that in your life too. Why should I be so quick to shine the spotlight on a God who allowed cancer to come into our family, who allowed the car accident to happen, who allowed the bad news to come, who allowed the job to be lost, who allowed the kids to go off in a direction that was really dangerous, who allows crime and shootings and all those different things? Why should we be so quick to shine the spotlight on him and say, man, what a glorious God that is? Well, maybe at least in part because of how the rest of the story turns out. So Pharaoh told Joseph his dreams. There were two of them. And Joseph said, you had two dreams, but they have the same meaning. And God gave you two dreams because he wanted to impress upon you how serious this is. And the number seven comes up quite a bit of times in both dreams. And the meaning of the dreams was this, is that for the next 7 years after that, the harvest was going to be abundant in Egypt. Like they're overflowing with food. So much, they would hardly know what to do with all of it. So it would be 7 good years. But then after the 7 good years, there were going to be 7 really, really bad years where you wouldn't be able to harvest anything. No food would be coming in. And God was telling Pharaoh, you should plan ahead for the sake of not only the people in Egypt, but the people all around the world, because Egypt was kind of like the center of the world at the time. You need to plan ahead. And Pharaoh's thinking, yeah, that's right. If this is true, and he was convinced that it was, which is good because it ended up happening that way. There were 7 good years and then 7 really, really bad years. Pharaoh's like, we got to make plans. And he said, who can I put in charge of this? Who is wise enough to oversee the collection of and storage of food for 7 years? And who is reliable enough and trustworthy enough that they will distribute it evenly and equally and fairly to anybody who comes asking? And then he looked right in front of him. And who was right in front of him? Joseph. The guy who had been through all the crummy stuff. The guy who had been forgotten about. But now the guy who was basically the second most powerful person on the planet. That's why we shine the spotlight on God. Because he doesn't forget about us. Because our stories always have a good ending. Joseph's did, and this isn't the end of it. We'll pick it up again next week and talk more about Joseph. But God doesn't forget about us, and he doesn't forget about you either, no matter how many times we're tempted to believe that he does.